Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, designing custom bathrooms that fit every personal style. More at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Certain plants can cause quite a mess in our backyards. Some, like dandelions, are nuisances, but others, such as honeysuckle, are invasive species. And without intervention, they can overrun native flora, causing ecosystem effects that ripple out to animals and people. So how do we deal with these non-native species? Some say if you can't beat them, eat them. Others use them for artistic purposes, and still others turn invasive plant parts into natural remedies. Wendy L. Applequist, an associate scientist at Missouri Botanical Garden, has edited and authored a chapter in a new book that covers each of the above. The volume is called Love Them to Death, Turning Invasive Plants into Local Economic Opportunities. And she joins us now to discuss how. Wendy, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we also want to hear from you. What invasive species have you had to deal with, and what approaches did you use? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. So Wendy, in preparing for this segment, I was really surprised by how many plants I recognized but had been unaware that they are invasive species. So let's start with this basic concept, right? What is it specifically that makes a plant invasive?
Well, an invasive species is one that's moved from its natural habitat to some other place and then starts to spread to a degree that does environmental harm. So, for example, a plant that is moved to a new environment and then it starts growing out of control because the pests or diseases or competitor species that limited its populations back home don't exist in the new place.
Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about a non-native plant, that is different from invasive?
Right. There are many plants that have been introduced that get naturalized, that mm-hmm. grow, but they aren't running amok. They'll mm-hmm. just be in small patches like they were back home or like many native species are. And some people may not be happy to see those, but they're really not doing a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of damage are we talking about?
Well, crowding out native plants, large vines can strangle trees, water weeds like water hyacinth can cover the surface of lakes and basically choke off the light to the fish and other plants. Some plants are allelopathic. They produce toxins. Bush honeysuckle does this. They produce toxins that discourage other plants from growing around them, so they become these monocultures where you just see a sea of this one plant.
Mm-hmm. And the word invasive, I mean, it certainly captures sort of the aggressive nature mm-hmm. of some of these things. How is it that these invasive species get here, you know, and then take over lawns? When you go to public parks, you see them. How does that happen?
Well, many invasive species of other types, like insects, get introduced by accident, but most of our invasive plants were brought here on purpose. They were considered useful because they grow so well. They were thought maybe to be good for erosion control, they're ornamental. They would be good in horticulture, and they were planted, and then they grew really, really, really well. Mm-hmm. And by the time people figured out that they were a problem, there was too much of it to just rip it out.
Yeah. Can you provide one or two examples of some of these that we would see around us?
Well, the honeysuckles, for example, bush and Japanese vining honeysuckles, are very attractive plants. They have these beautiful large white flowers. They were introduced in horticulture. Kudzu, here in St. Louis, we're a little too far north for it to be a serious problem so far, but if you go a little ways south, you start to see it appearing. It was introduced for erosion control, and it also has many uses. So the federal government was advising people to plant it for a long time.
And then figured out this is not it.
Right.
And there's also a distinction that is made in the book that you've edited, Love Them to Death, between invasive and nuisance plants. And one example of the latter is dandelion. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about how folks can use dandelion. But why is it that you included non-native yet not invasive plants in this book?
Well, I don't really think of dandelion as an invasive species because when you see a sea of dandelions, it's always in a very disturbed habitat like a lawn, like my lawn in particular.
Okay.
Sorry to my neighbors. A plant that can go into a native forest or a native prairie and start taking over is a much more serious matter.
Mm-hmm.
But I give the authors of this book a lot of freedom to talk about whatever they wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And some people talked about fish. So somebody may have said, you know, dandelion is not originally native. It is weedy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to mention it.
Right. I'd like to hear a little bit more about traditional uses. And in the introduction, we talked about the eating part. Now, some plants that are classified as invasive in the United States are routinely and pretty extensively used in their countries or regions of origin. And my favorite example is one we talked about earlier, and this is Perilla mint. I eat as much of this as I can. You can wrap, you know, barbecued meat in it, and it's really delicious. It also produces an oil that's used in cooking, and it has some medicinal value as well. Now, in parts of Missouri, perilla mint is just another leaf and something to get rid of rather than enjoy or to use as part of a natural remedy. Wendy, what is it that people should understand about traditional and cultural uses of these invasive plants?
Well, these plants, just as much as things that are more expensive and need more care to grow, can be very useful. They can have great medicinal benefits, like the perilla. There's been a long-term clinical trial of leaf powder for high blood pressure, and since it's a food plant, you know that it's going to be pretty safe.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to encourage people to say, what a wonderful plant perilla is. I should plant it.
Right. And how often, you know, in the course of your work, do you get questions about that, about what it is, you know, should be planted, what should not?
Well, fortunately, we have a really great horticultural advice helpline with people who know a lot more than I do about horticulture. And we also have a garden advice website. And so they don't come to me for that kind of question because I wouldn't be very good at it. But as a general rule, I would say to be very careful about planting anything non-native that isn't well established and with understood properties, so to speak. You know the Bradford pear or Callery pear?
Yes.
Those used to be just a crummy tree that was sterile and didn't spread. And now it's a crummy tree that spreads like wildfire. So
right.
To quote Dr. Ian Malcolm, life finds a way.
Oh, my goodness. Well, and we actually have talked about the Bradford pear or the Callery pear tree. It has those white blossoms. They're odoriferous.
Yeah.
People have described the way they smell in very many ways. Yeah. And you're calling it a crummy tree. It's not very stable, right?
Right. The wood is so flimsy. I grew up on a street. The whole block was lined with them. And by the time I grew up and left, they were all gone because they had all broken in half during storms.
Right.
So they were never a great street tree anyway.
Mm-hmm. And just so folks know, you can reach Missouri Botanical Gardens Horticulture Service Hotline, and that number is 314-577-5143. We also want to invite you to this conversation. What has been your experience with invasive plants, and how have you used them? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. We need to take a very quick break here, but we'll be back in just a moment to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about invasive plants with Wendy L. Applequist. Wendy is the editor and also a contributor to a new book that is called Love Them to Death, Turning Invasive Plants into Local Economic Opportunity. So that economic part of the title, what is that referring to? Is it economy only in terms of dollars?
Not necessarily, because if you go out and you pick some perilla leaf, say, and you bring it home to eat, you aren't spending anything, you aren't getting anything, but you are improving your nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
It's a benefit to
right.
you. And what I hope is that people will tackle their local invasive species and be moved to go out and harvest them in a way that ultimately controls their populations.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know you're more likely to go out and pick ginseng than to pick perilla if you don't know how to use it.
Right, right. Now, artistic applications, this mm-hmm. is one of the ways that people will use invasive plants. And there are some tips there on how to create different kinds of paper and fabric dyes. And there's even a chapter about using some plants as an alternative source of fuel. Mm-hmm. With all of these uses covered in this book, who is it meant for?
Well, it's intended to showcase the diversity of possible uses with some appeal to scholars of economic botany, but also, I hope, to normal human beings, if I can say that.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Extension agents, perhaps chefs, artists, craftspeople, that they might look at this and say, hey, there's something I could do here. I could go and cook that. I could use that. Herbalists or mm-hmm. herbal products manufacturers might say, I could use these things.
Mm-hmm. The natural remedies part of this, that is your specialty. I do want to remind our audience that we are not dispensing medical advice today. We're just talking about traditional uses for plants that have been introduced into our ecosystem. As an associate scientist with MoBot, how is it that natural remedies became part of your work and research? Did it start there, or did that interest and passion precede your arriving?
Yes, I always had an interest in herbal medicine, and I was hired as a postdoc in 2000 to write a book on morphological identification of medicinal plants mm-hmm. and commerce. And I've been fielding medicinal plants questions ever mm-hmm. since.
Yeah. What is it that sparked your interest in that to begin with?
Well, it's people's medicine. If you can go out and pick something and make a product at home that helps your cold or flu symptoms, if you can grow it in your yard, then you don't have to go spend a lot of money on a product that may have side effects. It's in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah. Is there one that you use on a... Well, I hope not on a regular basis, because you are healthy most of the time. But speaking of cold and flu, I mean, that is plaguing many people. Is there something in particular among that invasive plants, you know, category that you often use?
Well, no, my go-tos are not technically invasive, but Japanese honeysuckle flower buds are a very valued medicine for colds and flu. They're traditionally combined with forsythia fruits and often with other species in Chinese formulas.
Mm-hmm. What does that flower look like?
It's a long white flower. It's got a narrow tube and spreading lips. You can suck the nectar out of honeysuckle flowers.
Oh,
kids
okay.
love to do that.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I think with clover I did when I was a kid.
Yeah, but you use them at more the bud stage in medical practice, herbal practice.
And continuing on that note of a specific invasive fruit, there are, plant. In Love Them to Death, there are a number of species that are listed. And kudzu is one that we have talked about. But can you explain a little bit more about what kudzu looks like and how it is used?
Yeah, kudzu is a giant green vine farther to the south of here. It can grow over whole trees. It can cover a city block. It's huge. The leaves have three leaflets. It has pods because it's a legume species. It's got purple flowers. It's a very useful plant. The root is used as medicine. It's good, among other things, for helping people with alcohol use issues to drink less.
Oh.
And the starch from the root is used in Asian cooking as a thickener and for making of candies. The flowers can be used to make a sort of purple jelly. The stems are fibrous. The fibers can be used to make a thread, although that's very labor-intensive, and they can be used in basketry. Everything except the seed pod, basically, is useful in theory.
And Wendy, I understand that you had mentioned to our producer, Maya Norfleet, that kudzu hasn't made it as far as St. Louis City just yet. But it has been traveling.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, it's politically incorrect these days to talk about climate change, but we are in a higher USDA zone than we were when I moved here, and that means that things will live here that wouldn't live here 25 years ago.
Right, right. And you'd mentioned that the introduction of some plants happened in certain parts of the country because of similarity in climate, right?
Yes. Kudzu and many other eastern U.S. invasive species were moved here from East Asia. There's actually floristically so much similarity between the flora of eastern United States and East Asia. Same genera. Things were moved over here because botanists knew they would probably grow, and sometimes they grew very well.
Right, a little too well.
Yeah.
So dandelion, we talked about a little bit earlier. You said you have lots of them at home. And this is something, it's something that comes up a couple times in the book. It's not quite an invasive species. When I was a kid, my grandmother, when we lived in southern Ontario, she would pick dandelion greens and would eat those in kind of a salad. How else is dandelion used?
Well, in addition to the leaf being a raw or cooked herb, if they're not very young, I would cook them. The root can be dried, ground into a coffee substitute or stretcher. It's used medicinally. The leaf is a diuretic. The root is traditionally used for as a liver tonic, and a bunch of animal studies show that it is liver protective. The flowers can be used to flavor wine, dandelion wine.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. Which also sounds very romantic. On that note, what is the most common medicinal plant question that you get?
Gosh, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I've been asked a lot of things about viral infections in the past few years, and I've had to say, well, You know, I use certain plants that are clinically tested for colds and flu, mm-hmm. and that doesn't mean that they'll be good for COVID, but it doesn't mean that they won't be good for COVID either.
Right.
So I think it would be somewhat unethical to say either, oh, don't use that, or mm-hmm. oh, you must use that. Mm-hmm. I try to walk a very fine line here because, you know, it's not my place as a botanist to be giving medical advice.
Right, right. And we said that that is not what we're here doing today.
I don't want to do that.
So going back to some of the examples, mulberry, you had mentioned earlier, and this is an interesting one because some mulberry, as I understand, some of it is native,
right.
and then some of it is invasive.
Yes.
Which is the invasive mulberry that we see in Missouri and Illinois?
The invasive mulberry is Morris alba and white mulberry, and the native is Morris rubra. And that doesn't refer to the fruit color, although there are white mulberries whose fruit taste is sort of not so good. But this is referring to the bud scales, so it's not related to the fruit color.
And it's traditionally used in what ways?
Well, the leaf and the twig are used as medicine. The leaf is reputed for blood sugar control. There's a number of clinical trials for that. It's used for diabetes. And the fruit is, of course, tasty. It's a very tasty fruit. The reason you don't see it in the supermarket is it's such a fragile fruit. You just can't ship it.
Oh, okay. And what does the fruit look like?
It varies from white to purplish black, but it's usually a sort of a dark color. And when it's ripe, and it looks sort of like a raspberry or blackberry, with a lot of little mini drupelets. But the fruit is formed differently. I'll spare you the botanical details.
Oh, okay. And can it be used for dyeing, for example?
Probably. I would guess it would not be a very fixed dye. I would guess it wouldn't be lasting.
Oh,
but,
I see.
But I don't know much about that. I've never tried it.
Okay. So maybe not wear a white shirt if you're... Well, yeah.
Oh, then it would be permanent. Yeah,
sure.
if you get it on yourself by accident, it will definitely be permanent.
Okay. So in the course of working on this edited volume, you had said that you put out a call for people to submit chapters for this book?
No, I went looking for
them. Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. And did you find what you were looking for?
Yes, for the most part. There were a couple of things I wished could have been included that weren't, but we have this great spread of people with all different kinds of expertise, and it's not all academics. It includes architecture experts, a basket weaver, a dyer, people who do hands-on things, and I really like that diversity.
Yeah. Is there more awareness of how, beyond, you know, pulling out and using herbicides, how invasive plants can actually be used in ways that are beneficial and economical?
Well, I hope to inspire that understanding, but I don't want to say don't pull them out. I want to say, if you use them, maybe you'll go pull them out more because you're getting something out of it. But I definitely don't want you to say, oh, we've got to keep this kudzu going. I want people to believe, once I'm learning to use the kudzu, if I could actually kill it, something else would grow there that was native that you could also use and benefit from. Mm-hmm.
And just in the last 30 seconds or so, what do you think is the most rewarding part of using plants in this way?
Well, again, it's self-reliance. It's empowering when you can go out and pick something and cook it and eat it. You feel empowered. You feel skillful. And I enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. Wendy Applequist is associate scientist at Missouri Botanical Garden and the editor of the new book, Love Them to Death, Turning Invasive Plants into Local Economic Opportunities. Wendy, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.